And welcome to Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul DeTino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. We're going to get into a few different topics over the course of the program. We'll get to your phone calls. We'll get to your tweets. So OTA number 7, Paul, is in the books. They are having an OTA as we speak as well today. But each and every day, John Schmuck, Dan Salamone give you a recap of what occurred at practice. They also go over some of the standout players. And I think if you look at the OTA time period thus far, Paul, it seems as if to me the tight end position is one position in particular that has really stood out. Matt Lacoste is a player we've brought up. He's been sidelined due to injury. He's been making an imprint. Will Ty's been making plays. Evan Ingram's been making plays. It's a position maybe that we haven't talked a lot about in terms of the depth department, but it's one that I think has been a bright spot thus far.
Well, you know, of course, to this point, there's no contact. And that's a big deal here because the tight ends often will play on the line, and that's a part of what they're going to have to do. You know, it is funny, though. Almost every practice report that we're getting from either Schmelk or Salamone continues to have a tight end in it. And you're right. It's not always the same guy.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing. It is a good thing in one regard. Although I will tell you, there is a tremendous amount of optimism here about Evan Ingram. A tremendous amount. They have been, the coaches, very impressed with his athleticism, even more so than they thought they would be. And they're very impressed with how quickly he has picked stuff up. Now, we won't really get a gauge on that till they start playing preseason games and he's actually taking real snaps in a live bullet situation. Does he panic? Does he misread something? We won't know until then. But to this point, all the stuff that they're giving him seems to be sticking. And they are just peachy thrilled with Ingram. And that's not to say the other guys aren't performing well during the OTAs, because they are. But all of a sudden, that tight end position is now going to be very intriguing as we get into training camp. Come August, I'm going to tell you what, folks. You got to be keeping an eye on the defensive ends. You got to be keeping an eye on the running backs. You got to be keeping an eye on the wide receivers.
Yeah.
You got to be keeping an eye on the tight ends. and those positions, because it seems as though there is such competition. The offensive line also. And then, of course, there's the corner spot, which is thin. So you got to keep an eye on that spot because it's thin. But all these other spots we're talking about, there are too many bodies. They can't keep them all.
Which is why good players, unfortunately, are always let go across the NFL landscape. It's not necessarily the case with respect to the Giants, but it's a good problem to have when you feel as if you have a number of options that you could test out during the course of training camp, during the course of some of the preseason games. You mentioned Ingram, and I think probably the most important factor here, Paul, is building chemistry with Eli Manning. At this point, it's not so much, okay, the pads are not on and there's no contact. It's the fact that the timing, the routes, and understanding, hey, this is where Eli Manning likes to throw. This is where I need to expect the football. That, I think, is a positive development that you can at least get out of OTAs.
Well, the sooner he and Eli are on the same page, specifically about the routes and the hot reads, and, you know, if Eli's gonna call audibles, he's got to know how to make those adjustments. The sooner he gets that stuff down, the better off the Giants are going to be.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number, hashtag Giants Chat. We're going to open up the phone lines here in a second. Your thoughts on what's been taking place during the course of OTAs. But another item that we want to get to is NFL.com has put out a number of features during the course of the offseason. And one of the features that caught our eye is they went through every NFC team, not just the NFC East. They went through every NFC team and they had this feature, which was written by Greg Rosenthal, that was titled Biggest Remaining Weak Spot of each NFC team. Biggest remaining question mark, at least. And they have, obviously, every team that they've gone through, and they have also highlighted the four NFC East teams. Let's start with the Giants, Paul, and the one item that they threw out for the Giants, and I think it's interesting. He describes the Giants as a roster of extremes, and this gets back to what you just pretty much ran through in terms of the various spots. Quote, there are position groups that rank among the best in football. Wide receiver, defensive line, secondary, he writes. And then there's position groups that rank among the shakiest, what he's calling it. Offensive line, linebacker. He has this group called Eli Manning Truthers and Running Back. And then he says, ultimately, the entire season could come down to whether young tackles Eric Flowers and Bobby Hart reward their organization's undying faith, end quote. So that's his write-up on the Giants. Extremes in terms of the roster, and then saying that the offensive line, specifically the two young tackles.
Well, I think the people who are very critical of the Giants can certainly point to those areas and say those are the thinner areas on the roster. Now, how thin are they? We have discussed the offensive line for a number of weeks, in fact, a number of months, at how the back end of the depth chart is clearly better. I think we can say that without fail.
And that was a focus this offseason.
Okay. Now, that usually leads to better competition to maybe push a guy or two in the starting lineup. Then you have the additional improvements you would hope from Flowers and Hart, which, again, I still happen to believe in. The skeptics will not believe that the Giants' offensive line has gotten better at all until they see it in a regular season game. And I guess that's fair.
Absolutely.
The evidence to this point is that it has been a, at best, an adequate offensive line, certainly good for the pass, not so good for the run. So at best, it's been an adequate line. And that's being rather generous, I think. Until the evidence is in to change their minds, the critics will continue to pound on those guys. I don't blame them. But at the same time, because we have the luxury of being around, we can see certain things that should logically lead to improvement. And for that reason, I'm less skeptical about the offensive line than the critics will be. And I will point towards the fourth corner being an extremely important question that has to be answered during the preseason. I will point towards the running back situation. They've got to find out who's going to be their short yardage and goal line back. If they're not going to get a thumper in here, okay, if we're going to fold our tents on that and say, hey, Giants are what they are. They're not going to make any other additions there. I still hope they can get a thumper, but if they're not going to, who's going to emerge out of this running back core? Is it going to be Gallman? Is it going to be Perkins? Who's going to be that guy who physically pounds that third and one or physically pounds into the end zone when they're inside the two-yard line? Who's that guy going to be? Right now, I don't know. To me, those are huge questions, even more so for me at this present time than the offensive line. But that's only because I think I've seen things that make me feel better about the O-line, and you folks out there haven't seen it. And I get that. That's where I stand.
In terms of the rest of the division, then we're going to open up the phone lines at 201-939-4513. Rosenthal says for the Eagles, it's the secondary, and it's something we talked about at great length on
this program.
A lot of question marks. They revamped the secondary for about the third straight year. They have some young pieces. They have some veterans that have moved around across the NFL landscape. The Redskins, I thought, was interesting. His biggest question mark about the Redskins is their defensive line. And he says that they're taking some chances on journeymen as opposed to established guys that have hung around with a team. He likes the Jonathan Allen first-round pick, which I think was a steal, at least on paper. We'll see how that takes off moving forward, but he's looking at guys like Stacy McGee, Terrell McClain, and Ziggy Hood as journeyman veterans that haven't necessarily stuck with their respective teams, which I get. I don't think that's a stretch, but I think that the Redskins with their linebacking core, which he's not taking into consideration, Paul, remember, that's a big part of the front seven. It's not just necessarily the D-line. They run a 3-4 defensive scheme. I think there's some strength and some options at the linebacker spot that can maybe make up for maybe what's not appealing in name in that front three group.
Well, according to the Owlads depth chart right now, and of course we understand that can all change, they're looking at having Kerrigan, Brown, Foster, and Smith as their starting four out of that 3-4 scheme. We know what Kerrigan is. He's always going to be a guy you have to watch. I mean, even when his numbers are down, he could still wreck a game. All right, so
disruptive player.
Yes, I don't think anybody would disagree with that. Zach Brown, I don't know. I'm not real impressed. I think he's just a guy. Foster, again, if he was that good, wouldn't the Niners have kept him? So I think he's just a guy. and Preston Smith. We just don't know enough about him yet.
Well, Smith
he's still
has
a young guy.
And
developing.
He's been a bit up and down, correct?
Yeah. 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 So, I mean, I think at worst, they're just okay. I don't necessarily think they're bad. I think they're probably just okay, which I think the Giants linebackers are okay. I don't think there's anything wrong with being okay, especially in the Giants' case when you have a great secondary and a very, what we think is going to be a deep defensive line.
Which helps and takes pressure off of the guys on the back end. I'm also looking at the fact that even behind the projected starters, Will Compton and Trent Murphy, who are veterans that have been with the Skips over the last few seasons, are reliable options as well because they do like to mix and match their linebacking core. Finally, for the Dallas Cowboys, the question mark is pretty much the entire defense across the board. Is the defensive line going to take pressure off of the secondary? Is the secondary going to take pressure off of the defensive line? That's what his rationale is. And we've talked about the secondary. I know you mentioned that. If you look at the guys that start in the playoff game, a lot of new faces, veterans, but just guys that have not been in the mix, at least in last year's playoff appearance. And then as far as the defensive line is concerned, you know, their biggest question mark is they may be down two of their key guys again because of early season suspensions. I mean, David Irving, who was actually a very productive guy, had a breakout season last year, is now looking at a potential four-game suspension. So the old story is, Paul, you could be a great guy with plenty of upside. What good are you if you can't stay on the field or you can't be on the field?
And it's not always injuries.
Yeah, it's got nothing related to injuries, nothing related to durability.
You know? I mean, and that's why I'm not going to argue the point that just the entire Dallas defense is a question mark. Because, you know, when you have questions on your defensive line and in your secondary, one is supposed to help the other. And if both of those units are big question marks, how could you possibly feel confident? How? You don't have a pass rush to speak of, and you don't have proven guys in the secondary who can make the big plays to stop big plays. How could you feel good about that unit? You can't. You just can't. So you want to be generic and say the defense? I'm okay with that.
So we're going to throw it out to you. Biggest question mark, biggest weakness for the teams within the NFC East, an opportunity for you to weigh in, as well as some of the observations that you have read in terms of what's been taking place at OTAs and the upside of this tight end group, which I think Paul and I would agree has really stood out thus far during the course of the OTA period. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants chat. Let's open up the lines. We have Diego in Connecticut. Diego, welcome aboard. What do you have for us?
Good morning, guys. Happy Tuesday.
Same to you, Diego.
I just have a couple of statements, and I just have one question for you guys, and I'll probably take it off air after that. I think the Giants have done a good job just during the offseason. You know, I think they've kept most of the talent on defense, and, you know, I think they improved their offense. And I do believe, like Paul said, that, you know, their line will be way much better next year. And seems like, you know, both tackles are putting in the work to get better. And I think this being their third year, they're going to solidify that line. I think, in my opinion, the biggest story in the offseason to me is the kicking game. And I think that, you know, given I think the Giants have like the eighth hardest schedule in the league this season. And I think a lot of these games are going to come down to field goals. I don't see the Giants going to, let's say, Denver and just blowing the Denver Broncos by, you know, 20 points. I think it's going to come down to the kicking game. So I think that's going to be the difference between the Giants being in the playoffs and being out of the playoffs. And I obviously this kid, Aldrick Rosas, I believe that's his name.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't have much experience in terms of being in the league. I know he has a strong leg. So I guess my question for you guys is, do you agree that a lot of these games are going to come down, you know, to 3 points or less, or, you know, maybe a fourth quarter, you know, 2 minute, field goal to tie the game, going overtime, whatever the case may be? If you guys are, you know, in the organization, do you feel comfortable, I guess, and I know you haven't seen much because it's, you know, preseason hasn't, you know, and the games haven't started yet, but do you think it would be wise for the Giants to look elsewhere to bring some competition in to try maybe a proven veteran to try to solidify that position? And that's basically my question for you guys. And, well, thank you very much for your time.
All right, Diego. Thanks for the phone call.
Who do you want that guy to be? I mean, the guy with the most accomplished resume on the street right now is Dan Carpenter.
Former Buffalo Bill.
And beyond that, there's not a whole lot out there. So, you know, if you want to do that, I suppose there's nothing wrong with providing competition for Rosas. But the Giants' approach right now seems to be, despite what Jerry Reese said a couple of weeks back, when he said, we'd like to sign a veteran kicker going into camp, Rosas has done so well out here in the spring, so well, that I think they may have changed their mindset just a bit. It sounds as though, like, he's going to be the guy through the spring into the summer unless he gets shaky. That's what it sounds like to me. And if all systems are go and arrows are pointing up, they may very well just go with him into the preseason, let him kick in some live preseason games, and only then, if he falters, I think, are they going to look for a veteran? Because there will be somebody.
And somebody could be released. There's a few teams, I can tell you right now, that have multiple kickers on the roster. Tampa Bay, for example.
Sure.
They have a competition. So
you could
always grab. Plus, remember, the Giants signed Randy Bullock right before the season started when Josh Brown had the one-game suspension.
And then Robbie Gould actually had to catch a flight to London to kick for them against
the
Rams.
There are guys and there are usually options because we say this all the time. Every organization has a list that they keep, and that's why they bring in guys throughout the season.
It's known as the short list.
There you go. They're always observing who's out there in case of emergency situations. So, I mean, getting back to the question that the caller raised, Paul, if you were to evaluate Odric Rosas, and you're right, he has looked impressive in the spring. And by the way, if you did miss it, the interview that Paul and I did last week, we had his college coach, his special teams coordinator from Southern Oregon on, who gave just a little bit more info on his mindset, which I think could at least open the doors for fans to see him in a different light. You could go back and look at the archives of Big Blue Kickoff Live. But getting back to the point at hand, I don't think what needs to motivate him is bringing in a veteran kicker. Because it seems as if he's determined, he understands the opportunity in front of him, Paul. What he needs to do is, and you touched on this, when the preseason games come and you're out there, and it doesn't matter if the game's on the line or not, meaning every time you're out there.
Drill it.
There you go. And then you prove to the coaching staff what we saw during the course of OTAs when you went through everything and it seemed like it was simple. It needs to be the same way in games. That's what he has to go out and do. So, I mean, we could sit here and talk about his upside. We could talk about his strong leg. The only way that Odric Rosas will prove that he deserves a spot on the 53 is during the course of a game situation, which won't come until the preseason. But I don't think you need to bring in like a Dan Carpenter to sort of keep him on edge. I think he understands what's at play right now.
And I've changed my tune on this because I thought originally they would bring a veteran in during the spring and just as an insurance policy in case the kid faltered. But at this point, I don't know that it's necessary. I really don't. I will add one other thing, though, to the caller's comment. And I know that the predominance, because of the quicksand of parity, the predominance of games in the NFL are decided by 6 points or less. I totally understand that.
Giants played a lot of close games last season.
They sure did. And I know that the schedule is tougher this year, logistically as well as we think competition-wise. We think. Having said that, I would be surprised if this defense allowed more than 16 points a game. They allowed about 17 a game last year. And I think they'll be just as good, if not better. I really do. So I'll say, let's just say they give up 16 a game on the average. This offense, look, unless those offensive linemen don't fulfill the promises that we believe we have seen during the course of the spring, they should have no trouble averaging 26 points a game offensively. Well, 26-16 as your average score, your average differential. That says to me there should not be too many field goal games this year for the Giants. Their offense averaged 23 a game last year?
Well, much lower than 2015, I will tell you that. I'll look it up to be certain so we can get the exact number. But your point is that you feel the offensive production per game will go up if the defense stays where it is at worst or improves, you're talking about more of a gap. And I agree with you, Paul.
I'm doing simple math.
But I'm not evaluating my kicker based on those circumstances. No matter what you just said, and once again, I don't disagree with it. I want the guy that I have confidence. I put him out there, and he's going to take care of business.
I'm not using that equation to grade or to demean Rosas in any way. What I'm simply saying is I don't think the Giants are going to have too many games decided by a field goal this year. They should not. They should be better than that. It should not come down to field goals in the final 2 minutes of games. Not if you believe that this offense has improved and this defense has, at the very least, stayed the same. I mean, seriously, I'm just doing simple math here.
It's just, as you mentioned, though, the key word is parity when it comes to the NFL. Well, and you see a lot of fluky things. No matter how great you look on paper and no matter how great you are statistically, sometimes you wind up playing closer games than you anticipated. Now, the Giants averaged just over 19 points per game last season.
It was so,
so that was 26th in the NFL.
Okay. And it was 27, I think, the year before.
Yeah, they lost out on about 8 points per game.
Right.
In terms of 15 to 16. Right. I mean, that's a noticeable. People tend to forget about it.
Shame on me for saying 23. Off. That was just way out of line. But I do know it was about 27 the year before. And so I'm going to say 24, 25
a game
this year.
You take the middle ground, let's say. Right? I think that's a safe assumption.
I mean, they may not be as good as they were 2 years ago offensively, but they're certainly they should be pretty close. So, again, average score of 24-16?
Now, people are going to point to the fact, well, in 2015, the games were all nail-biters, but you're talking about the 32nd-ranked defense.
Yes!
So we go from the 32nd-ranked defense to a top-10 defense. You return the offense from 15. I completely understand where you're going with this. And on paper, everything looks great, and it's easy to have paper debates and paper conversations, but you've been around the NFL long enough to realize paper doesn't always translate to the field. That's the only reason why I'm prefacing all of the commentary with that.
The paper and the script only works in the NBA when we now know every year who's going to be in the finals.
Yes. Well,
and it just doesn't make any sense to even play the season.
Competitive balance. The NFL has it. That's why I said I love the NFL for that reason. There's a lot of people, they like the dominance of one or two teams. I like the fact that you go into this league and you've got about half the league that has a legitimate shot to make the playoffs, win divisions. That says a lot about the league.
You know I can't stand the quicksand.
Well, I know you can't. But
I liked
it
when there were 8, 9, 10 terrific teams, and you still didn't know who was going to be in the Super Bowl because there's probably 8, 9, or 10 teams that legitimately had a shot. Think of the '80s, man. You're not that old.
Oh, I'm not young. I hear you. Yeah.
You know. Those were great years, man. The 80s, 70s and 80s, the golden era of pro football. I'll keep saying it. I'll keep beating that into the ground. 70s and 80s, the best times for pro football.
The NBA
this quicksand of parity is so mighty.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. You just said, I'm assuming you're turned off by the NBA because of what's taking place.
I clicked it off in January.
So there you go.
Once the Knicks had that 9-game losing streak, that was it. So, the NBA became a non-entity for me.
So if you're turned off by that, then technically if the other option is parity, you'd take parity. No? Wouldn't you?
No. No, so, because I expect the Giants to be among those top teams every year.
Well, but what I'm saying
and
is...
When Parcells was coach, the Giants were among those teams who legitimately were playoff contenders every year.
Well, but here's the thing. There's 32 teams in the NFL. If I were to tell you that 16 teams every single season have a legitimate shot, you're not talking about that every single team, but you've got your top-heavy group, and that could still be included in that in terms of the Giants' chances. I don't think that's bad for the league. If half of your league has a legitimate shot of making the playoffs, and then maybe of those 16, 8 have a chance to win a Super Bowl, that's a good balance.
Parity isn't so bad, and balance isn't so bad when you're talking about parity and balance between high-quality samples. The problem is the quicksand of parity has become the quicksand of mediocrity. That's the problem. In the NFL, there are probably three really good teams a year, and then you're up to your navel in quicksand.
Well, what, you mean in terms of balance, though, are you saying good teams, meaning teams that actually have a very good offense and defense?
Right. In terms of teams who you could say in September, you know what, look at this roster. This team should really be a Super Bowl contender because they're that good. not because, oh, they got a chance to win, because guess what? Nobody else is better. They're just as good as any of these other miserable teams.
Well, let me
ask
you,
it's a totally different way to look at it.
Hold on, though. If you look at last year's playoff field, okay, let's just go back to last year's playoff field. I'm going to bring up the AFC first.
I mean, you pretty much know the Patriots are contender every single year.
You know, okay, I'm not going to disagree. But I'm talking about, okay, so let's go beyond the Patriots. You're going to tell me that you couldn't have made a case that perhaps, now I understand Oakland lost Derek Carr. Now, if Derek Carr is healthy, I think you think a little bit more highly of Oakland's chances. Going back to last season, here's the standings from last season. I think Oakland had a legitimate shot. Kansas City.
My feeling on this, the only true Super Bowl contenders going into the final month and a half of the season were the Patriots and the Steelers and the Packers.
Okay, well,
and perhaps Atlanta. I wasn't as sold on Atlanta as a lot of people were. And that's it. I didn't think there was any other team in my mind that was going to go.
See, I would have said that of the six teams, I think three in each conference, I would have put some substance.
Well, I'm taking two and two.
Oh.
But you know what? Just go back to the 80s for a minute when you had the Niners, you had the Packers, you had the Giants, you had the Eagles, you had the Redskins. It was rough going, man. I mean, it was really rough going.
I would still make the case that today's NFL
is rough.
Heck,
even the Saints weren't that bad for a while there. That's all I'm saying. You know, the Bears. Bears were tough.
Well, they had one of the best defenses NFL history.
You know, Buddy Ryan's Eagles, they were tough. You know, these were terrific football teams. And you had that whole first level of teams, that 10, 12 grouping of top teams, they were all really good. So there was parity. There was balance. But amongst the top shelf, now the top shelf has been reduced from those 12 to now the top shelf is 3 or 4. And those other ones, they're down here now. And now your balance, your parity is the mediocrity down here. That's what it's become.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get to some tweets along the way. Let's head back to the lines. Jason is in Maine. Jason, what's happening?
How are you guys today?
Doing well, Jason.
Hi.
How's things with you?
Good. This comment's kind of late, I guess, but there was a time you guys were talking about the new celebration rule. And I'm an old school guy, so I obviously don't like it. I think it's a poor decision. I just think it... You know, when you celebrate in the end zone, when you get beat, you know, and all the players are still out in the field, I don't think it's a good idea. And I know a lot of young people might like it, but yet, if you think about it, if you're a young Giants fan, you got a game on the line, you're playing, let's say, the Cowboys in MetLife Stadium, and it's overtime, and Dez catches a 40-yard pass, and the entire Dallas offense is dancing in the end zone for a minute and a half, we're probably not going to vote for celebration at that point. So I'd just rather see it the way it was, I guess.
Jason,
my fairness, 2 cents on that.
In fairness, I mean, celebrations were allowed in the NFL last season. It's not as if this new rule has all of a sudden just opened the floodgates. It's just that they're loosening the restrictions that were on those celebrations. So, for example, you can have a group celebration with your teammates, and you're not going to get penalized. And you could do things to use the football as a prop, as long as it doesn't exhibit violence. So that's really all they're doing. But, celebrations existed last year. It's not as if we're entering the new age of NFL football. And as far as, you know, celebrations, I know Paul is probably waiting to jump through the screen and high five you, because I know he's in line with you, Jason.
Go right ahead.
I am on the opposite end of the spectrum, because the way that I look at it is, and I will stand by this statement forever, sport is entertainment, no matter whether you're old school or new school. The only reason why, and I think you can relate to this, Paul, and hopefully you can relate to this, Jason, why do you watch football? You watch football because you love it and you're entertained by it, are you not?
Okay.
No?
Yeah.
You don't watch it because you find it boring and somebody's forcing you to watch it. So if it's entertainment, then showing human emotion when you take part in a sport is part of that entertainment value. So that's why I really don't see it being a harmful entity. If you're in the midst of a game, even when you were a kid and you were playing sports, you score your first bucket, you score a touchdown, you're playing with your friends, you show emotion. So all they're doing is they're allowing the professionals to show emotion. I just don't see how it's a problem.
Jason, we're going to make Lance and all these other young folk happy, okay? Whenever somebody scores a touchdown, we're going to dangle a disco ball from the goalpost, okay?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm asking to
do. That's what we're going to do. We're going to dim the lights in the stadium, hang a disco ball from the goalpost, and you can all go down there on the
there
end zone
go.
And do a John Travolta, okay?
Absolutely.
That's
we'll add to Saturday Night Fever. I'm all for that.
I mean, I'm with you, Jason.
Come on, you're
I'm
taking
with
it
you.
To the whole extreme here with respect to that.
Look. Homer Jones did the spike. That's good enough for me. I don't need to see anything else. I don't need the Broadway show in the end zone after a touchdown. Okay? I don't. Period.
Right. Well, but here's the thing. Jason, let's just use it. So, for example, I mean, Odell Beckham is very animated. He's very emotional. He's done some celebrations.
And the thriller thing was funny. I'm not going to tell you I wasn't laughing when he did the thriller thing.
Okay, so that you were open to.
No, actually, I don't think I would rather he didn't do it. But as long as he did it, I had a chuckle.
What about when he mimicked being like a track star and was running over the
hurdles? I wasn't nearly as happy with that at all.
You weren't happy with that.
He could have pulled a hamstring.
I mean, listen, anybody could pull a hamstring at any point. You could pull a hamstring walking
back
to the locker
room. We have discussed this. Jason, if you listen to other shows, we've discussed this before, like when Gramatica.
Right.
When Gramatica
that injury.
Blew out his knee after celebrating a kick.
What about Stephen Tulloch, the linebacker for the Lions?
He
tore his ACL when he was celebrating a sack.
Correct.
It happens. But
and you're okay with this?
No, but here's
because it happens, you're okay with it?
Wait a minute. So you're going to tell me that when Stephen Tulloch should get a sack, he should think about if, God forbid, he jumps up and down, he's going to tear an ACL. He should be thinking about that. That should be part of his mindset.
You know, here's what I don't understand. How was it okay years ago when someone wanted to celebrate with a fist pump or a high five? That was apparently okay for a lot of years. And now, all of a sudden, that's not good enough. Now we got to jump up and down like we need to take a leak.
It's emotion. I mean, I never thought
of
emotion
as a crime. No, it's not emotion. It's choreography. It's choreography. It's not emotion. It's gone beyond emotion. Now it's all planned. It's choreography. Oh. No.
Boy, I just, once again, I mean, we're going to completely agree to disagree on this front for, I think, ages to come.
When you have a National Football League highlight segment on SportsCenter or NFL Network or whatever it is on Sunday night, and they're wasting time showing us celebrations instead of actually plays, something's wrong.
Well, I don't think they're taking up that much time.
They're taking up enough time.
I understand your time is limited in terms of reviewing a film, so I can understand it being inconvenient. You want to get to the X's and O's and move on. I understand with respect to that.
Jason, these young folks, they just don't
these
get
young
it.
Young folks, yes. I know. Absolutely.
Right. I just have one more thing for you guys, if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. What else you got?
Well, I just heard something on TV or on the internet today about just thinking that Odell did the right thing by missing OTAs, but what he mentioned was that he, if I heard him right, not to show up at all because of a contract situation. And so I'm wondering, do you guys think there could be a holdout from Beckham this year? And I'll just take that off the air. Thanks,
well,
guys.
Before you go, where did that come from? What report?
I think he's referring to, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jason, I believe ESPN had a discussion on SportsCenter today with Adam Schefter where that was raised as speculation. There was no validity to that. They were having a conversation. That's what I had read. I don't know. Is that where you heard that, Jason? Because that's where I thought I had read it. I think we may have lost Jason. But that's where
okay.
I don't know if anybody's on Twitter and they have maybe heard it. I believe it was Schefter that had a conversation on SportsCenter, and there's been a lot of people that have been running with that. That's where I think that speculative.
So raising a hypothetical.
Correct, exactly. I have not heard any significant report that they spoke to a source. It was just a conversation that it was occurring among colleagues and so forth.
I know nothing of that issue.
Yeah.
And as far as I'm concerned, we've discussed OTAs ad infinitum. They are voluntary. And I maintain a very strong stance that if you want to complain about a player not being at your spring offseason program, then go back and have the CBA opened up and then write it up that they're mandatory. It's that simple. Write it up.
Well, and the key will be next week is the 3-day mandatory camp.
There you go.
That's
in writing.
Something that everybody has to attend.
That's in writing. And if he's not there, then it's a problem unless he's been given an excuse.
Correct.
And that goes for any player.
Yeah.
And again, okay, may I say to you folks out there, and if you've read my Twitter in the last couple of weeks, you know this is a fact. Go back And again, I've been doing this for 35 years. I go back to my early stages of covering the NFL and the Giants. Routinely, 8, 10, 12 guys would miss the offseason program. Routinely. And what the Giants did is that they wrote an incentive clause, okay, into their player contracts. And they would say to the players, if you participate in 90% of the off-season sessions, you will be given a stipend, a bonus, an incentive, if you will. And for guys who were local, they got one level of incentive. For guys who were traveling from across the country in far distances, let's say from Arizona, California, Dallas, they would get a little bit of an additional stipend because the Giants wanted to help them out covering their travel
expenses across
and their expenses, you know, knowing they were taking them away, you know, from the families across the country. So that if they weren't local, living in Hudson County or living in the city, you know, it was a little more of an inconvenience for them. So the team, the Giants as an organization, said, you attend 90% of the offseason sessions, we'll give you a little bit of a stipend as an incentive across the board to all the guys. And that's what the way it was done. So to every single writer or media person out there who doesn't understand the way it was done, maybe they haven't been covering the team long enough. Maybe they haven't covered the NFL long enough, and they don't understand how these things happened. That's how it happened in those days. And every coach would say, I'd love to have my guys here. Just like McAdoo said the other day, I would want all my guys to be here. But guess what? It's not mandatory. It's not in the CBA that they're required to be here. So any person who wants to complain about a player not here during the offseason program, don't complain about that. Complain about how the CBA has been written to allow them to be voluntary. If the owners and the league themselves wanted them to be mandatory and they wanted to be able to cry about it, they would have negotiated in the CBA with the players' union that the off-season program is mandatory. You have to show up for 80% of the sessions. There would have been something written in the deal. But the way the CBA is written, there is nothing written in the deal. So nobody, writers, fans, media, should be even making a story out of this. It is truly fake news.
Legally, they're protected, is what you just laid out. That was something that went through the collectively bargain negotiation process when they made up the new CBA, and it's a give and take. I mean, I'm sure there's coaching staffs that probably went to their owners and said, we want these guys to have to show
up. Sure,
but
there were.
When you got to give and take a little bit, some things you have to say, okay, hey, the players want them to be involuntary, and that's how it's going to be. But I want to just take a step back here, Paul, and we'll get back to your phone calls in a second. And you know, this is more of, you know, I'm hoping that the fans look at it. Odell Beckham is a wide receiver that has put up over 1,000 receiving yards and double-digit touchdowns in each of his first 3 years in the league. The NFL is being consumed on a daily basis. It's a 24/7, 365-year league now, Paul, compared to what it was like when you were covering in the early days, okay? Because you were making some age zingers at me, so now I'm going to throw some zingers back at you. It's the gift that keeps on giving. But my point here is
that... You got my Geritol around anywhere? No,
yeah,
that's just water.
A little bit later on, we'll get to that. We don't want to give away all your secrets. But the point is, we're so consumed by the National Football League that when the games are not going on, we need to grab things to talk about. And I think this is the latest example of, let's make something out of a story that you mentioned is really not a story. And here's the other thing. If you're a Giants fan, when it's week three and Odell Beckham's on the field, and hopefully the Giants offense is producing and is competitive, is anybody going to go back, Paul, and reconsider what we were talking about during the course of June of him not showing up to an OTA? So it's important now, once again. Why? Because there's nothing else to talk about. There's no games. It's a non-story, a non-entity when we're talking about week three and the team is moving on to bigger and better things.
You have a very thirsty media.
Yeah.
Okay? Because of their editors, their bosses, their newspaper people who are so thirsty for clicks, so thirsty for attention, so thirsty to have content out there. Magic word, content. That fake news is news. Fake news gets clicks. Let's go with it. That's what it is.
201-939-4513, telephone number. Andrew is in Stanhope. Andrew, what's happening? Andrew, are you there?
Charlie from Maine. It's Charlie. That's cool. You got the music under Charlie. He's cool. You know, his intro music.
Yes,
I don't have
indeed.
Any intro. But music. The one thing, I love Paul on because he's old school like me. You remember those Eagle-Giant games, the 49ers in the 80s, late 80s.
Bears.
Early 90s.
Redskins
Eagles
games. Absolutely.
The Giants. I remember it was Andrew Sr. said that they beat the Giants like they manhandled the Buddy Ryan Eagles, manhandled with Reggie White, those guys. And that was when the Giants were good with Parcells in the Super Bowl year. So those are some definitely tough games. You had Joe Gibbs, the genius coach with the Redskins. So and the Hogs, the offensive linemen, the three amigos.
No, that's
those
part of what's made
receivers.
Up the rivalry in the NFC East because a lot of these teams have history with one another.
Big time, yep. And the Bears, like you said, the Bears, even when they didn't have McMahon, they were still tough. And I don't mind the celebrations as long as they're not prolonged or antagonizing the other team. And my sister, who's not a big football fan, just a casual Giant fan, she said that was the best part of the game. She's like, the big guys dancing. I love that. That's the best part. And the movie, The Replacements, the football movie.
Great movie.
With
yep.
Keanu Reeves.
Love it.
Love that. How do you love that movie?
Love it.
How do you love that movie,
because it's
though?
Funny.
I can't. This is, I just cannot wrap my
head. Because it's funny.
Yeah, exactly. But it's got the best celebrations. How great are the celebrations in that movie?
Right?
I can't believe you love that and then you refuse to
because
watch it in the NFL.
Because it's fake.
Oh, my God.
It's a
God.
Movie. It's fantasy. It's fake. That's why it's a caricature. It's
what
a
about,
cartoon.
Yeah, did you like Any Given Sunday?
Not really.
Did you see that? Oh, you didn't like that?
Not
okay.
really.
Because that has celebrations, too.
So. It was not. I did not.
No, I like The Replacements better than Any Given Sunday.
I watched Replacements like 55 times.
It's a great
times.
Movie. You don't have to convince me. I love the movie.
I love it.
Yeah. But that's
because
why I'm
it's
just,
a comic that's, book.
I know.
It's
but,
a comic
but
book.
But you're entertained by that. That's my point.
Oh,
the,
my
the
goodness.
The sumo offensive lineman. Going up and down with his legs as a team. I mean, come on. That's classic.
How about when he barfs in the huddle?
Well, that may have not been my first choice, but there you go. All right? Come on. That is classic. Anyway, continue, Andrew.
See, I touched on something good, Paul, like that. But John Madden appears in the movie. He has the line. He goes, the best thing about when a fat guy scores a touchdown,
yep,
then
indeed.
You get a fat guy celebration there.
Yeah, that's when the offensive lineman got it.
I like when Favreau foams at the mouth.
Where
I got,
has,
the ball.
Got the
I
ball.
I got the ball.
Yeah.
I got the ball. Go get the ball. I got the ball.
Yeah. No,
great,
that's
great.
Some great lines and great
as far
scenes
as
in
Beckham,
that movie.
Love it.
I think Beckham should have attended to show the other players, even though he's the best player, he needs it the least because he's the most talented, but he should show up to motivate the guys that are fighting for roster spots, guys that are rookies, guys that aren't as good as him to say, if I'm here, you know, I'm awesome, and I'm here, so that shows them, like, wow, Beckham's here, so it's important.
Well, but
let
me ask you this, Andrew. I mean, I get the point that you're bringing up, but if you're an undrafted free agent trying to make the New York Giants, if you're a rookie trying to make the New York Giants, do you really think that there's not enough motivation from that fact alone that the odds are against you, that you need another player to be there to motivate you? I mean, I completely understand your point about veterans set the tone for the rest of the team, but if you're an undrafted free agent, you know already coming in, you've got to bust your butt to make this team because the odds of you making this roster are very slim. So if you don't show up, to me, the writing's on the wall. I don't think you need another player to convince you to do that.
Right, but even like a Sterling Sharp, it seems like the younger guys that are on the roster, like it seems like Chris Carter or those guys, Jerry Rice, they would do it. And Eli's there, so as like a role model to show the other players. But the running backs, I wanted to ask Paul Perkins. He seems like he's undersized. I would be worried about him getting injured. It's mostly the offensive line. Fluker looks good. And, you know, I'm counting on those two guys, Flowers and Fluker. They have the blocking tight end, so I think if they have better blocking, that's the main thing. But when I met you guys last year at the training camp. I think it was Paul Perkins. He walked right by me, and I'm only 5'10", and he was, like, a lot shorter. You know, he was little, so I don't know if he could handle it. Speaking of old school, Paul, you remember Dave Meggett. He reminds me of him. And I'm going to let you guys comment on the running backs, and I'll leave Paul with a question. When Rodney Hampton was a rookie, would you rather have him as a rookie or Tiki Barber at his best season after the fumbles, you know, like maybe 2006 or whatever?
Well, Tiki in his prime is
a rookie, in his prime.
Tiki in his prime is a borderline Hall of Famer in my mind. You know, and the fumbles and the fact that he retired a year or two too soon is what's cost him the chance to go to Canton. Because he was really right there on the cusp of being one. Hampton, as terrific as Rodney Hampton was, not a Hall of Fame player. So that's my answer.
In terms of Paul Perkins and his size, he was 5'10". Once again, I saw enough in the last four games that I'm not too concerned about the durability, too concerned about the lack of size. Remember, Maurice Jones-Drew, and I understand he was a completely different body build than Paul Perkins. Maurice Jones-Drew was only 5'7". People tend to forget about that. And he was one of the toughest running backs in the NFL during his prime. The guy was only 5'7". Now, I understand he had a different build than Paul Perkins. I'm not trying to sell that they're duplicates, but size alone to me does not necessarily indicate toughness and durability and how you're going to hold up. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't get too overwhelmed in terms of how tall a guy is or how short a guy is. Scott is in the Bronx. Scott, welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live. What do you have for us?
Hey, gentlemen. Good afternoon. Hey, Paul. Can you hear me, please?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Paul, I just want to follow up. First of all, I'm like yourself, an old-time fan related with the Giants. I go back to the days of Tarkenton. We had talks before.
Absolutely.
Mike, the purpose of my call today is I think there's too much of the divas, the showboating, and just go back and dig nuts and bolts of playing football. I want to talk about as you mentioned, about the depth. There's like three top teams, four teams, and then it drops. Yes, you're correct about the previous team errors. They were all very good and solid, and anyone can sneak up and take the championship there. My concern is, starting from the OTAs, my concern is turn back the clock, go back to some of the preseason. Don't get me wrong, the concussions, all that the health status of the players is very important. But I think part of the injuries and part of the inconsistency of play is basic fundamentals are lost today. The combine is good, strength, this, agility test, but it's the X and O's that win the game.
Mm-hmm.
You get on the field, you put the straps on, and you go at it, and you need a balance of the – maybe I'm so spoiled because the previous, you know, the old Super Bowl teams, they ran, they passed, they blocked, they tackled. They were tenacious in both trenches, and not just the Giants. I'm talking about across the whole NFL.
Absolutely.
It's lacking that today. And we talk so much about the celebration. I got one funny story. I think Beckham Odell is a phenomenal talent. No question. But here's two things I say. If he was in the era of Jerry Rice, would he have the talent he has today? I mean, the receptions, the yardage, that's number one. Number two, I was at the game when he had the little meltdown against Carolina. Okay. And here's my frustration here thinking about it. If that was Phil Simms' huddle, do you think Phil Simms would allow that to occur? Or Bill Parcells, and then you're going to say it's an old era. Let's even switch to the New England Patriots. If that was Tom Brady's huddle or that was Belichick as the coach, would that type of behavior be allowed? And again, don't get me wrong, a super talent, but sometimes the game is lost with the superstars and we lose the team concept. I don't know what you guys think. That was just me maybe being too old school. I don't know. But it's just my feeling about the game. It's drifting a little further away to just a show instead of the game itself. I don't know what you guys think.
Well, I mean,
thank you for taking my call.
You got it, Scott. You brought up the New England Patriots. New England's got Rob Gronkowski, who's one of the most emotional players in the National Football League. And last time I checked, it hasn't really taken away from his production. I mean, granted, he's been sidelined with injuries the last few seasons, but, I mean, there's a reason why they're in the Super Bowl or they've gone on to win it more often than not, and he's a big part of that. And the years where they've come up short, sometimes he hasn't even been on the field or he's been banged up. So, once again, there's a team that's used as the model in the NFL, and they've had some emotional players too. And I don't think that they've all of a sudden struggled or suffered as a result of that. I mean, when the player is getting to the point where the celebration or the emotion is taking away from the production of the team, then, Paul, I think you have something to talk about. But, you know, everybody who continues to throw it out, there's not an overwhelming amount of examples across the NFL landscape where, unless you have them off the top of your head, Paul, where you felt the emotion of a player has taken away from the production of the team. For example, Cam Newton's been criticized an awful lot by the fan base on a national scale. How is Cam's celebrations in the end zone, though, taken away from the production of the Carolina Panthers offense? I don't see them being synonymous with one another.
No, if you want to talk about the actual impact on the yardage itself,
and that's
the only thing
at.
You could say is if the flag is thrown and it's 15 yards on the kickoff,
that's
legit.
A fair example.
That's legit.
I won't disagree with you there.
Other than that, no, it doesn't quantify in terms of yardage or points lost. I agree with that. Is it simply unnecessary? Yeah. Is it something that could lead to poor sportsmanship and perhaps even serve to rile up the other team? Maybe. But how do you quantify that?
Well, it's hard to do that, but it's easy to quantify. Like you said, if a player gets flagged and there's a 15-yard penalty and that changes field position,
there's a hard-nosed value there.
That's a reason to call out a player
and
make sure, yes, that
it
doesn't happen again.
It's yardage.
Or, for example, if you're a player that scores a touchdown and you step over the opponent and you get flagged for taunting, that's an example of where you need to take that player aside and you need to teach them a lesson.
Let me make something very clear about this. And Jason was the old-time caller who called about this earlier. Let me make something very, 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 very clear. I'd like to get rid of all that stuff, but I'm not one for throwing the flag. I don't want to see Team X penalized 15 yards on the kickoff because Player Y decided he was going to put a Broadway show on in the end zone. I'm not in favor of that. I do want to see it out of the game, but I'm not going to penalize the team 15 yards. All those guys, 52 of the players on that 53-man roster are being punished because some clown decided that he had to do a pee-pee dance in the end zone.
Well, and that's why...
That's not right.
Interesting choice of words, but that's why they've loosened the restrictions. Because the officials didn't want to be put in a position where they have to judge,
agreed,
is this excessive celebration, is this allowed? They're making it very strict in terms of what would be penalized.
Okay.
So what needs
to be done, in my mind, and of course I'm not the commissioner, I would very simply, I'm going to find them, and I'm going to make them pay big time. And hopefully that will reduce it. I will hit them in the wallet. I'm not going to throw penalties on the penalty flags and make the rest of his teammates lose yardage on the ensuing kickoff. No, that's just dumb. That's just dumb. But if you want to spend a week choreographing your Broadway show in the end zone, just know it's going to cost you. That's all. Go ahead. Do your handstand. Do your flip. Do your little jig. You'll be writing a check on Monday.
Well, there's consequences to every action.
But
those are going to be fine now. You can do the choreography, and you're not going to be penalized unless, like I said, you use the football as a prop that exhibits violence. That's a no-no. And the Replacements has an example of that, which I'm surprised you didn't bring up, but we'll save that for another portion of the program. In the meantime, let's head back to the line.
It was a cartoon!
Well, no, but there was an example. I think the Replacements...
Let me make something very clear to you. Wait a minute.
Yes.
The Replacements, it was not a documentary.
No, it was a scripted movie. But thank you for clarifying
that.
It was satire.
It was a comedy.
I was going to ask you whether or not it was based on a true story, so I'm glad you clarified
it's
that.
Comedy.
I was a little confused at first.
Well, it is.
Yes.
I mean, there were work stoppages in the NFL.
Yes, but come on.
Okay.
It's not a true story.
It was a satire, a comedy. Okay?
Well, the audience was lost, too. I'm glad you clarified that for them, too.
But that's why it's okay.
Yes,
that's why
it was fun. Well, I'm saying you could still use it, though, as an example to show
what goes on in the stadium across the street is not a satire. It's not a comedy.
Life. Yes.
Okay?
It's all serious. There's no laughing allowed in football. It's all serious.
It's about beat the other guy or be beat.
That's right. the end-all, be-all. Let's head back to the phone line.
Thank you.
Julian is in Florida. Julian, welcome aboard.
Hey, guys. How are you? How are you doing?
Hi. Doing well, Julian. What do you have for us?
Good, good. So I'm just going to cover the celebration really quick. I think I'm with Paul a little bit on this side. Like, I think you got to look at it from other sports aspects. When a dunk happens in the NBA, it's exciting. It's the crowd. The crowd goes crazy for it. Boom, dunk. They'll probably just look at the crowd, pump up and yell, let's go, right? So that's something, you know, not too bad. Now you're going to compare that to baseball with a Joey Bautista bat flip. That's insulting. You know what I mean? It got everyone upset. It got the crowd upset. You know, it's like in your face kind of thing. So some celebrations make the players who they are today. Like it's like a trademark. Victor Cruz with his salsa. Not insulting. It's just like his little dance, and then he's gone.
You know what? Here's the thing, and here's where I have a problem, because if a guy, and I know, how do you gauge intent? It's so difficult. It's like in a courtroom. Did the guy intend to do this, or did it just happen? Like with Victor Cruz, it was a tribute to his heritage and his grandmother. I would have a very hard time punishing a guy for offering a tribute to his heritage and his grandmother. That would be very hard for me to punish him for. Okay, I would have that would really make me grit my teeth, and I would probably have to just let that one go. Okay, but here's the difference. Like you just said, it's that word intent, the momentary spark plug of emotion that forces a player to go, yeah, nothing wrong with that. But once you get into the choreography, you have now clearly identified intent. That to me is where you are way over the line, and that's got to be penalized. That's got to be fined. Like, can you understand that one?
I completely understand the difference that you laid
out. All right, are we okay with that?
But they're allowing those group celebrations now, which may be planned.
And I disagree with that.
So
the choreography needs to go.
Like when they dunk on the field goal post, that's gone already. They can't do that.
Yeah, you can't do that. Was already outlawed.
Correct.
And they're not allowing that to come back, so that's still outlawed.
Right, but like at the celebration, like you see, that's just like kind of insulting. You know what I mean? That's even if it was back, that shouldn't be allowed either way. So, you know, happy that that's still gone. But, you know, like I said, I think it should be classified just like the NBA. When they do a dunk, look at the crowd, yell, let's go. Like Paul just said, when they yell, yeah, and get the crowd pumped. You know, you've seen Eli do it a couple times. He throws a good touchdown. I think last year he had a great touchdown to Larry.
Eli usually does this.
Exactly.
He clenches his fist and he goes, that's Eli's celebration.
Tell me that doesn't pump you up when you see Eli go, yeah.
And that's
Phil Simms used to do the fist.
And so that's the whole point. That's a part
Phil
of the emotion.
Phil always did the fist.
Yeah, and that's a part of the emotion.
All right, that's not choreography, though.
Okay, but not every celebration in the end zone involves choreography.
All right, but that's what we're getting to now.
Well, I mean,
more and more touchdowns.
Beckham gets a little excessive with his whole Michael Jackson dance.
More and more touchdowns are becoming choreography. That's what's got to stop.
They're in the end zone. My feeling is, you know, Julian, you used the term insulting. If you're that insulted by a guy celebrating, then it's easy. Keep him out of the end zone. If you're that insulted by Jose Bautista flipping the bat, don't give up a home run.
How about this?
I mean,
you want to do a dance in the end zone? Get off the football team and go to Broadway and audition. There's a stage right across the street over there at 42nd Street.
Well, maybe that's their future career after their football career is done. You don't know. There's a lot of people that have gone into the entertainment world. But what else you got here? Because we're up against the clock, Julian.
I'm actually a guy I got to go into. But I have one more thing, and I'm going to hang up on you guys, and I'm going to listen to it later on. But I just wanted to ask you, Paul, what your opinion is. I know you love the power back. What do you really see for Wayne Gallman this year? I mean, I really want to get into him. I would love to see a lot more of him and see where you think he'll come in behind Paul Perkins, or if Shane Vereen is still going to be the starter, Paul Perkins behind him, or
I think Perkins
seems to be the bigger back.
Perkins is the odds-on favorite to be the starter, with Vereen as the third down back. And Gallman, either he's going to wind up backing up Perkins, or there are some people who believe that because of the style he ran with at Clemson, he may wind up becoming the power back, and that he can do those kinds of things. I say it's a lot to ask a guy to be a pseudo power back at Clemson and then ask him to do it in the NFC East. That's a jump. I don't know if he can do it. Maybe he can, and if so, more power to him, because the Giants need somebody who's going to get those tough yards and who's going to help milk the 4-minute offense. I'd love to see Gallman be that guy. I don't know if he can be. We won't know until he's out on the field in games. And we see how does his style, how does his physicality translate into the NFL where guys are bigger, stronger, faster.
I think the opportunity, though, at least is there for him.
Looks like
it. Depends on whether or not he'll be
utilized.
Because
there's no power back on the roster.
Yeah. So that, to me, is where he can make his biggest impact in year number one. Chad is in New York. Chad, what's happening? Chad,
how are you doing?
How are we doing, Chad?
Yeah, I'm here. How you doing?
Hi, doing all right.
A couple things. I don't want to rag on Eli in any way. He is our quarterback, and he's awesome. But this past year and the year prior, you know, obviously the O-line has his problems, but he's really shown, even without pressure, that his dump-off pass, his ability to connect with the player that's prepared to take the ball off the side, he's really not very good at putting it there accurately or in the right way where the player doesn't have to readjust and put themselves in a bad position. And, you know, he's, you know, two-time MVP, Super Bowl quarterback. He's amazing, and, you know, everybody can be put up for a little bit of criticism, and I think that's one thing that could be, you know, emphasized to our Super Bowl quarterback is, you know, look, if you look at the film and you look at the games this past year, I know the O-line and the pressure and all that, but even when it's set up as a dump pass or even a screen, which got better this past year, he's known for ducks and putting out ducks, but it's not been great. And I have one other point I'd like to make.
As you said, they don't throw a lot of screens in this offense to begin with. And usually the dumps are more checkdowns.
Yeah, that's
checkdowns,
particularly what I'm talking about.
All right, what happens in checkdowns? Checkdowns, by definition, means you've already looked at your first, second, sometimes third option. And your checkdown is now, often, your fourth option, which probably
means... Yeah, it's a pressure situation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So those are not always going to be perfect throws because chances are somebody is at his feet or maybe even knocking on his shoulder or his arm.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I appreciate the condition, the time, place, and condition of every play and the manner in which that player is put into that position to be there as the name of the thing is a dump-off play. It's to get rid of it, to try to get something out of it.
Check down means you've looked elsewhere, so the clock is running out.
Yeah. You know, look, it's one of the things that in the West Coast offense that we've moved into with, you know, Giants 2.0, it's something that, you know, every yard counts. And when we were lacking on a running play, it was an area that could have afforded us some yardage needed as we tried to make up for running play. But I see your point. I just think it's something that is minor that I'd love to I'd love to see brought up to him, but
I just love to see the line block better.
Coach Mack do too often.
Yeah. Well, what was your other point, Chad?
You know, I've been listening to you guys for a long time, way back when Shakes first came on the program, and I think it's Ann from D.C. and all those days. And one of the things I wanted to say to Paul in particular, have you ever written a book?
No.
One of the things that I like that we've been talking about a lot, and not just when you're on, is the kind of, you know, the shift. You know, and you were there, as you've described in the past, I believe, you know, sitting down with Parcells in the lower depths of Giant Stadium.
Oh, yeah.
Having open conversations
with
the press. Great
days. Great days.
Yeah. And, you know, to have somebody who's been there, and there are others in the Giants media as well, but from your perspective, to extend both the game itself and how it was played, how the media was, and just Giants history to move from that 80s period on up into now, you know, there's no one who encapsulates that. So it was it's a little bit of a suggestion to maybe who else could do it. And if you don't, how are we ever going to know the real difference? And it's a nice way to kind of look at how football has shifted. And your title is pretty simple. Old school.
Well, they already took that. There's a movie called that already. Well, so
I appreciate the comment, the suggestion, and the respect. Thank you very much. I'd like to think that that's the kind of stuff I bring to this program whenever I possibly can. And I like to think that's part of the reason why I'm part of the broadcast team, is because I do have a perspective that other people don't have. because they weren't here. I mean, I've lived it. I've breathed it. And I like to think that that's something that I can add to whatever we do here at Big Blue Kickoff Live. I think Vinny Detrani, the retired Giants beat writer from the Bergen Record, is the other person who I quite frankly looked up to when I started covering this team in 1983. He was like a mentor to me in terms of how to cover this beat. Vinny's now retired, and quite frankly, I think he'd be a great guy. He just retired several years ago, a handful of years ago. I think he'd be a great guy to do the book. He's got more time than I do right now. Even though I have the off season, you know, it gets pretty busy around here.
You could be a key contributor, though, too.
I could contribute with it. We could collaborate. Vinny and I could collaborate.
Perfect. The best of both worlds.
That'd be a lot of fun. Two paisans sitting over the pasta at the table. I like it.
Watching The Replacements in between chapters. All right, that is going to wrap up today's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Certainly appreciate all the phone calls. I know we didn't get to as many interactions on Twitter as we had hoped. We'll try to answer your questions and comments off the air. But Big Blue Kickoff Live is up and running again tomorrow, noon Eastern, as we'll continue to cover OTAs and get you set as we inch closer to the mandatory minicamp next week. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live.